Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In her new and powerful book, Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt, veteran journalist Phoebe Zerwick tells the alternately tragic and inspiring story of Daryl Hunt. In 1985, Hunt, a young black man from Winston-Salem, was falsely convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the rape and murder of a white copy editor at the local paper. Many in the community believed him innocent and crusaded for his release, even as subsequent trials and appeals reinforced his sentence. Finally, in 2003, the tireless efforts of his attorney, combined with an award-winning series of articles by Zerwick in the Winston-Salem Journal, led to the DNA evidence that exonerated Hunt. As the new book makes clear, however, this was far from the end of Hunt's story, a story that included many years of important work in support of criminal justice reform and ultimately a tragic and premature death. Recently, I sat down with Zerwick to learn more about her coverage of Hunt's story and how the book came to be. Well, Phoebe Zerwick, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
The book, Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt. It's a sobering story, but an important one. And a lot of people in North Carolina maybe have heard something about it, in part because of the stories you wrote decades ago as a reporter at the Winston-Salem Journal. But if you would remind our listeners of this tragic story and how you became involved with it.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to take a minute to talk about this, but I'm just back from the Innocence Conference that was held in Phoenix this year. And it's a conference of all the Innocence projects around the country, but also it serves as a homecoming for this year. There were 200 exonerees, and it was a conference that Daryl Hunt always went to. I mean, I'm still kind of blown away and I'm still overwhelmed by the experience of being in the room with so many men and women who had so much of their life stolen from them. I think they put on the board that they added up all the years lost to the people who were in that hotel conference space with me. It was 6,000 years lost.
My God.
So I was thinking a lot, of course, about Daryl Hunt over the weekend and the role he used to play with this group. And his story was really more universal than it should be. There are now over 3,000 confirmed cases of wrongful conviction and some estimates that between 4 and possibly 10% of the 2 million people we have incarcerated in this country could be wrongly convicted. So Daryl Hunt was in the early 80s. He was a teenager living here in Winston-Salem. He'd lost his whole family by that point, but he really aspired to follow in his grandfather's footsteps. His grandfather worked for the city streets department. Daryl Hunt was essentially orphaned at the age of 14 or 15. He was unemployed in August of 1984 and essentially homeless. He was pretty popular with the women, so he slept where he could at night. But he was really trying to get on with the city streets department. Then his life blew up. There was a woman, a young white, and this is important, he was a black teenager, and there was a young white newspaper editor who was brutally raped and stabbed to death. And a 911 call led police to Daryl Hunt because the caller falsely claimed that he was Sammy Mitchell. And Sammy Mitchell was Daryl Hunt's best friend, the Blues Brothers. And so because of this false 911 call, Daryl Hunt very quickly became the lead suspect, really only because he kept cooperating with the police. And in a month, he was identified, turned out wrongly by two and later more eyewitnesses who had seen this white woman with a black man. Really from, I would say from the moment of his arrest, his conviction was all but inevitable because of the rush to judgment and the tunnel vision and the idea in the South, but really in this country, that if a white woman is raped by a black man, somebody's going to pay for it. And that someone was Daryl Hunt. And so he was convicted, and then he was charged with another earlier murder while he was in prison. So there was a period of time when he was facing two murder charges. He got new trials in both of those cases. He was acquitted in the second trial, but convicted again in the murder of the newspaper editor. And then he spent, after that second conviction, he spent more than 12, 13, 14 years trying to get that conviction overturned. And our system is set up for finality so that when there was DNA evidence in 1994 that showed that he was not the rapist, that evidence, the court said that that evidence really didn't matter that much. And it wasn't until 2003 when there was new testing done and when we had these databases of convicted offenders that a match was found and the crime was finally solved and Darryl Hunt was exonerated. He went on to become a really prominent and important advocate for social justice, really around the country, because there was a documentary made about his case. But really in North Carolina, his work led to important reforms in our criminal justice system. And he also worked at home through a project he founded called the Darryl Hunt Project for Freedom and Justice. He worked one-on-one mentoring and helping people coming home from prison. And that was his real, that was where his heart really was, because having spent all those years in prison, he saw what prison does to people. And he really didn't really feel himself apart from the other people he was in prison with who had been found guilty of the crimes they were convicted of. And he also saw how the system is stacked so much against people coming home from prison and how almost impossible it is to rebuild a life on the outside. But it appeared that he was doing well. I mean, he was such a prominent, charismatic figure, but inside he was not doing well. And eventually the trauma of the injustice and of the repeated delays in justice and the trauma of being imprisoned all that time. And then the problem of coming home to a culture that does not understand what you've been through, all of that caught up with him. And 6 years ago, he was found dead by what was ruled a self-inflicted gunshot wound, was what drew me back into telling his story and writing this book.
We're talking with award-winning journalist Phoebe Zerwick about her new book. The book is Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Darryl Hunt. And we're talking about the Darryl Hunt story that she tells so eloquently in the book. How many years was he in jail? Almost 20 years, right?
Almost 20 years.
I guess at least the small ray of sunlight in all of this is that some things came out of it that were good. Darryl obviously did wonderful work after he was released for people in similar plights, but we have made some small bits of progress, although there's a long way to go in our criminal justice system. You've talked about how many, the amazing percentage of people it's estimated could be serving sentences for crimes they didn't commit in our system, but there were some small rays of sunlight in all of this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in North Carolina, I'll talk about two of the most significant reforms as I see them. But in North Carolina, we now have, it's called the Innocence Inquiry Commission. Right. And it's unique in North Carolina. Some states have, some prosecutors' offices are beginning to review cases for their integrity. But we have a state agency in North Carolina that will investigate, that has the power to subpoena and can really take a fresh look at cases. And then if they find evidence of innocence, they will forward a case on to a three-judge panel that is there not to look at procedural errors in the original trials, but to examine evidence of innocence. So this is a really profound reform. That agency's work has led to 15 exonerations. And there's a hearing coming up later this month on the 18th of April in Winston-Salem. The confessions of four men who confessed as teenagers to the killing of a man in Winston-Salem who's the grandfather of Chris Paul, the basketball player. So,
right.
You know, people have been following this case because of that notoriety. And they are going to be looking at whether or not these men as teenagers were coerced into making false confessions. And if those judges find that that's the case, they can exonerate them. So it is a completely new and powerful way at looking at these cases. The other thing that Daryl Hunt's work led to was a law called the Racial Justice Act that was unique in North Carolina. It allowed for people on death row to appeal not their conviction, but their sentence if they could show racial bias in the sentencing phase of their trial. And most of the defendants on death row have appealed their sentences. The law was repealed by the legislature, but there was a recent ruling that is allowing those appeals to go forward, the ones that were filed when the law was still on the books. And because of that, we've had a kind of a de facto moratorium on executions in North Carolina while these cases make their way through the courts. And that is a really profound law because the facts, the data shows that if the race of the victim that most determines whether or not you're on death row, so if you kill a white person, you're more likely to get the death sentence than if you kill a black person. If you're black and kill a white person, then you're even more likely to get the death penalty. So what that says about us as a culture and us as a country is when there are homicides, we value the lives of white victims more than we value the lives of black victims. That's a really strong statement.
Yeah, the statistics are remarkable when you look at them. You wrote a recent op-ed in the Washington Post about the situation in Winston-Salem, this new case, which sort of highlights the issue of coerced confessions, which I think, you know, a lot of people watch TV dramas and they see, you know, games being played sometimes with suspects. And of course, the heroic prosecutors or investigators always get to the truth. But so often we now know that that's not how it really works, right? In the real world, sometimes these confessions are false or even lies are told to the people who are being interrogated that can abet that process.
Absolutely. Unless you've studied it, it's really hard to imagine why anybody would confess to something they didn't do, especially a murder that could put you on death row, right?
Right.
Why would you do that? And it turns out 12% of the documented cases of wrongful conviction have involved false confessions. And the pressure of the interrogation room is intense. And if you are a teenager, so a child, or if you have some intellectual disability, traumatized in your life previously, like, for example, if you are a victim of domestic violence, or even people have confessed falsely who didn't have any of those risk factors. The idea, finally, the pressure gets to be so intense, and police officers are allowed to lie. It's not against the law to say, oh, we found your DNA on the body. Your best friend has just confessed and named you. Police are allowed to say and do all kinds of things that lead people to falsely confess. There's a woman on death row right now in Texas who confessed to killing her toddler, and there's a huge effort on now to save her. Her execution is set for April 27th. She has all the risk factors for somebody who to falsely confess. She was a victim of domestic violence, which makes you fearful and susceptible to authority. And there's a huge push on to stop the execution, but our system is set up for finality, and so far she has not been able to get a hearing and get heard.
Coming up next, part two of my special extended conversation with Phoebe Zerwick. Stay with us.
Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part one of my special extended conversation with journalist Phoebe Zerwick, we discussed her new book, Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt, which tells the remarkable story of a black man from Winston-Salem who was tragically and wrongfully convicted for a murder he didn't commit, and how, after years of determined reporting and advocacy, he was finally exonerated and released after serving 19 years in prison. In part two of our chat, we talked more about Hunt's inspiring post-release work in support of criminal justice reform and assistance to the formerly incarcerated, his legacy after his untimely death, and the enormous injustices, many of them similar to those that so damaged Hunt's life, that continue to plague our criminal justice system to this very day.
So we've alluded to the fact that there were some positive things that came out of Darrell's work in the years after he was released from prison. The Racial Justice Act, which was in place for a while, I think there are many wish and hope that someday that will be reinstated. Are there other kinds of specific changes to our criminal justice system that could perhaps reduce the numbers of these horrific false convictions that take place and even incorrect sentences to death for individuals who are innocent? Are there things that state lawmakers, for instance, could be doing to change North Carolina law or federal law that would help alleviate these situations?
You know, some of these are procedural and technical, but the discovery laws have changed in North Carolina. So when Darrell was first tried and even the second time around, the defense had very little access to the police reports and police records. And now in felony cases, defense attorneys have access to police reports, which means that they can follow up with witnesses and they can look for holes and they can see what the evidence is. And that's really important. A lot of police departments change the way they run lineups to reduce the possibility of error, of eyewitness misidentification. A lot of police departments record interrogations so that then the defense attorney can see what was said. Now, that doesn't always work because often they'll do the interviews and then the recorded interrogation. So that's not a perfect reform at all. There have been so many of these cases now in North Carolina and, of course, all over the country that I think defense attorneys will say that jurors are more open to the possibility that the police could get it wrong and that the crime lab could get it wrong. There are a lot of reforms that we still need to work on. We still have the phrase is peremptory challenges. So during jury selection, both sides are allowed to remove potential jurors without stating a reason. And there are states that now require the prosecutor to give a reason so that they can't just remove Black jurors from juries, which they do because they know that if the defendant is Black, that a Black juror is going to be less inclined to believe everything the police say. Or Black jurors in general are less inclined because of their lived experience to trust everything that the police or forensic analysts speak to. There's a lot of reform happening with the way forensic evidence can be introduced, but there is way more reform needed. There's so many forensic techniques that are introduced as though they are foolproof science. DNA is science, and these techniques, blood spatter analysis and bite marks, I don't know what the status is of bite mark analysis in North Carolina, arson science, all of these techniques that are really a matter of opinion and interpretation and get introduced at trial as though they were science and with all the cloak of certainty that science brings to a subject. There's so much room for reform in the role that prosecutors play. You know, some prosecutors see themselves as seeking justice and will look at the evidence that police bring them, but many prosecutors see their role as going after convictions at all cost. And that's not really what their role is, but that's the role that many prosecutors take on.
Perhaps especially because they are politicians who run for office and perceive that that's what makes them popular. I wonder if you've had any thoughts about how it's always been my perception in recent years that a big contributor to some of the progress we've seen in the criminal justice realm has been the advent of television dramas that consistently show innocent people being, the DNA evidence shows that, you know, those kinds of aha moments in which, and I wonder if that's helped, you referred to the fact that juries seem now more perhaps open to this. I wonder if that's been a contributing factor, like that modern entertainment, television and movies have played a role in sort of illuminating this subject somewhat.
Yeah, I think it has been a factor, but I also think there's a downside to television dramas related to criminal cases, which is that we have this expectation that, there's always going to be DNA. And usually there isn't DNA. Like, I've been sucked into this British drama. It's an old one. It's called Silent Witness. It's about this brilliant, you know, pathologist and all these techniques that are really junk science, but she's lovely and brilliant. And so you get sucked in. But even a pathologist is offering an opinion, right? But the real problem, as I see it moving forward with the innocence movement, is that so many cases, there is no DNA. And so what you're left with is opinion, you're left with eyewitnesses, you're left with interrogations, and we have to find a way to investigate crimes in a way that's fair and just, and where investigators follow leads, where they don't cover up evidence, and where they keep an open mind to new evidence. And what happens so often is we all are shaped by our biases. So all of us suffer from confirmation bias. So, you know, once an investigator fixes on a suspect, it's really hard to see evidence that leads in a different direction. You know, it's a flawed system because we're all human and we're all flawed.
We're coming to the end of our time with award-winning journalist Phoebe Zerwick discussing her book, Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt. I guess it's hard not to come back to the issue of race in so many of these. We talked about the Racial Justice Act. We talked about Daryl. I take it your assessment that in addition to human fallibility, human racism plays an enormous role and probably has played an enormous role in false convictions, not just in recent years, but probably for centuries in this country.
Yes. I mean, the answer is just a resounding yes. And, yeah, you know, there's all this scholarship now that looks at how so many parts of our criminal legal system are rooted in slave codes and then in Jim Crow. And we haven't really escaped that. And that's why our solution to so many of our social problems is to criminalize and put people in prison. And that's why we have the highest imprisonment rate of certainly any Western country, any democracy in the world. And so we've just got to find a better way of dealing with our problems than locking people up. But of course, prisons are political too. I mean, our prisons are in rural parts of the state where we need jobs. I visited a prison way east in eastern North Carolina that is on the grounds of an old plantation, Caledonia. And, you know, there were prison guards there. I met a bunch of prison guards and, you know, their choice was traveling an hour to work in a prison or traveling an hour in the other way to work in a poultry plant. And, you know, they chose a prison because they could get state benefits there and and slightly better pay. But that's not a reason to lock people up so that people in eastern North Carolina have a place to work, right? I suppose I want to just speak a little bit to Daryl Hunt, and I'm taking my lead from him. And out of his experience, he just developed this huge compassion for people who are in prison and then have to find a way forward when they come out. And there are thousands of laws in place all over this country that laws, local regulations, licensing requirements that make it almost impossible for somebody to start over again. And so this idea that we send people to prison, they do their time, they come out, they start anew, it just hardly ever happens for people because that criminal conviction lives on with them. And that's where the subtitle of the book comes from, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt. It comes from an interview he gave where he talked about how, you know, once you're in prison, it doesn't really matter how long the sentence is, that sentence lives on with you and it's a life sentence. It's a Google search for, you know, you can find out whatever it is you want to do, somebody's going to find out what happened in your past. And we've got to find another way to deal with crime and to deal with violence in our society and to use prisons only for the people who are really, truly going to be a danger to the rest of us, not for everybody else.
Phoebe, thank you so much for writing this very important book, Beyond Innocence, The Life Sentence of Daryl Hunt. You can find this book, you can learn about Phoebe and her work and the book at phoebezerwick.com. It's right there, the whole story of it. Get a copy if you can. Go to your local independent bookstore perhaps and buy it, or check it out there online. Phoebe, please keep up the great work. Thanks so much for doing this important work for our community, for our society. And hopefully we'll talk again real soon.
Thanks so much, Rob. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. And you can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.